to Straight Talk with MJ. I am your host, Michelle Jeanette, and I'm coming to you on this episode from Nashville, Tennessee. I live in East Tennessee, but I'm in Nashville right now. I have come with my husband. He works as a catastrophic adjuster, and we had some very bad tornadoes hit Middle Tennessee last week on March 3rd, and just a lot of catastrophic damage here. Middle Tennessee is not used to this kind of tornado damage. We do get tornadoes occasionally here, but nothing like an F4 is pretty big for Middle Tennessee. So we've come here to work for a little bit and try to help the people get back on their feet. And I was able to meet up with our group, Crisis Response International. It's the group that my parents work with, and I was able to meet up with some of the volunteers and the founder and director, Sean Malone. So I'm going to be bringing you those interviews here in just a few moments. But I just wanted to share, make sure you're aware that on my website and the blog post for this particular podcast episode, I will be putting pictures and some video, because sometimes things that you hear need to have some visuals. And I had thought about doing a Facebook Live, but last two times I did it, I think my phone is just too old and it kept cutting off, disconnecting me from Facebook, and it was very frustrating. So I'm sticking with the podcast interviews, and then I will be sharing videos and pictures on my website at www.straighttalkwithmj.net on my blog page. And Straight Talk is two T's, and so you can go there, sign up for my podcast, but also on this episode, see the pictures and videos that go with the stories that you'll be hearing about here in just a few minutes. Also, I know the big story right now is the COVID coronavirus thing going on. And I really want to encourage people just really quickly we are not to live with a spirit of fear. God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of love, of power, and a sound mind. So we are to walk. We have the power through this to overcome the fear, to walk in love, and to not panic. We have a sound mind. That's what God gives us. Our relationship with Jesus will give us this love, power, and a sound mind. And it helps us overcome fear. We are not to walk in fear. So keep that in mind, all right? As you hear the media go bonkers and really throw a lot of fear into people that don't know the whole story, and this can cause a lot of overreaction and fear at the same time. And so we are to be smart with everything and take the necessary precautions like we would. If you're sick, don't go in public. I mean, just simple, basic common sense things. But as Christians, we are to overcome that fear with power, love, and a sound mind. So keep that in mind. And it's a credible thing here, because here in Nashville, it's almost like we're not really talking about it much. Of course, they're really dealing with the recovery and the rebuilding, and just still digging out street after street in these neighborhoods that you go down, still have piles of debris and trees and just their homes that have been demolished and pushed to the street so that the city trucks can come and pick all the debris up. And these people it's going to take several weeks or longer to try to get all this cleaned up. And so just keep these people in your prayers, because the storm is out of the news, but it's not out of their lives yet. And so you know, just keep these people in your prayers as they recover from this trauma that they have been through. A couple of the places that we've been, just one of the really, just I think it's a, I'd love to say God story. We came to this one street, and when you first turn on it, you think, okay, not a whole lot. Then as you go down, right in the middle, the tornado came across, and the one of the ladies that I was able to talk to, she was telling us the story about how her husband studied meteorology in school or in college. And he had been watching the news and watching the weather reports that night. And he went outside and he could just tell there was something not right. It just didn't feel right to him. And so he woke his wife up, and they called their neighbor, next door neighbor, and told them they really, something wasn't right. There was, the storm felt really bad, because I don't think they were really calling for big tornadoes at that time. And so, so they told their neighbors to go and find a place and get in the interior of their home to hide. So their neighbors got into the closet, but they decided to leave. They made that just last second decision to grab their stuff and leave. And it wasn't but a few minutes later that tornado came through and completely destroyed their home. I mean, it was a pile of sticks. They would not have survived that. That was a God thing, getting them out of there, and their neighbors survived. Most of their house was gone, but their closet was still there. And that was just one of the stories that we heard, just to, you know, as we drove around and talked to different people. And as you went to each neighborhood, there was another lady who was close to 90 years old. Pretty soon she was turning 90, and she had, her and her husband had built their home that she was in the 1950s, and they had been in this home for since then. And she lost most of her roof and a lot of damage to the outside of the house. She just hid in her bed with, because she lived alone, and she came out unharmed, but, her whole family, that whole street, they came together. It was amazing to see all these different volunteers, because, you know, Tennessee is known as the volunteer state. And the one thing that really has been jumping out to me here is how many people got out to help their neighbors, even though they themselves had suffered damage or loss or tragedy of some sort. They turned around and helped their neighbors, and all along the streets that we went up and down, that particular house, the neighbors brought their own bulldozer, they brought their tractor, they came and helped bring the tractor in, they helped her flip her little camper top, had flipped upside down, and so they came in and brought the tractor in to flip it back over. Up and down the streets, even the policemen were walking up and down, talking to each neighbor, just taking the time to stop and talk to them and see how they were doing. Everybody was thankful, grateful. Even though they had lost houses and things and property, they were still very grateful and thankful. And just story after story like that, as you walk up and down these streets, it was just amazing to see. So don't forget to go to my website to look at some of these pictures and listen to some of the one story I believe I'm going to share, and then a couple of the videos. But now we're going to listen to the director and founder, Sean Malone, of CRI, Crisis Response International. It's the group my parents work with. And I was able to connect with him and CRI while they were here, also working the Nashville, the tornado storm. So we're going to listen to his, our discussion about CRI, and then hear some of the volunteers with CRI and their stories that they have to tell. So I'm here with Sean Malone, the founder and director of CRI, Crisis Response International. My parents work with him at their camp in
Blue Ridge, Virginia. And they are here in Nashville helping those who were affected by the tornadoes that hit Tennessee on March 3rd. Sean has an amazing testimony, and I just wanted to touch base with him and connect with him while we're both here in Nashville. I'm with my husband working, and Sean is here with CRY. So can you tell us first how CRY started, how it all came about? I know your testimony is really cool with 9/11 and how all that started, but if you can explain how what got you into disaster response.
Yeah, sure. Well, I certainly didn't do it on purpose. It was really an accident. But you know, looking back now at the fruitfulness and the amount of people that we've been able to help, you know, obviously it's a setup from the Lord. And really how we got into it was just simple intimacy with Jesus. You know, John 15, abiding in the vine. And I was in a season of just real intimacy with the Lord back in, you know, early 2000. And I was working in the major motion picture business. And I just felt this tug, this pull of intimacy towards the Lord. I was spending a lot of time in prayer, and I would take my lunch breaks and go up on top of different building tops. We were actually shooting a movie with Kevin Kline at the time in New York City at these different seminaries and these prayer chapels, and I just wanted to go and be with Jesus. I just wanted to go spend time with the Lord, and I would respond to that, and instead of eating lunch, I'd go and pray. And for many months, I would go up on top of different building tops in Manhattan, and I would say this. I'd say, Lord, here I am. I'd faithfully take watch with you today, and just the burden of the Lord would come, and I would just groan and weep, and I just knew something terrible was coming to my city. And I actually asked the Lord this question. I said, God, are buildings about to come down in Manhattan? And I ended up taking a trip around the United States. And I felt like I was supposed to go see what was happening in different movements and different streams in the body of Christ. And a couple months later, I came back. And 2 days later, the events of 9/11 unfolded. And I remember watching, just like many of you listening, you know, the events unfold on TV, and that feeling of helplessness, the feeling of, I just wish I could do something. And, you know, we're in a moment right now where, you know, COVID-19 is paralyzing people in fear. And what do I do in a moment like this? And so as I watched, I just, you know, Lord, you know, what can I do in this situation? And I said to my dad, as we were watching the firemen the night of 9/11 dig in the rubble with 99-cent flashlights, it was almost pitch black.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, Dad, what can we do here? And you know, I thought to myself, wait a minute. We light up New York City all the time, like daytime. Let's get our movie lights down there, you know? And it was just simply looking at the resource that I had to help. And we ended up getting a call. We ended up calling the Union Hall, but then we got a call back, and they said, okay, well, you know, we'll mount, you know, our response the next day. And we ended up going down. We got down there just as it was getting dark on day two of the event. And, man, it was just perplexing what I saw in, you know, the experience down there. It was actually very traumatizing. And going through that, encountering that, not, you know, being with a military background, not, you know, doing a lot of overseas missions up to that point in time, just felt really, you know, instantly overwhelmed. And as I cried out and asked the Lord just told me, Sean, this is nothing compared to what you're going to see in your day in your lifetime. And at that point in time, I just really felt burdened to prepare the church for what was coming upon planet Earth in terms of the challenges and how not to be caught up in the fear of those challenges. And I think it's a great reminder with what we're going through right now with this virus, you know, and how we stand, not only stand firm in faith, or not how we just survive it, but how we thrive in the midst of it. So a couple of years later, I was working for Paramount Pictures in New York. We had gotten some mission training. And, you know, with YWAM, we love YWAM, and we were supposed to go overseas with them. And it all kind of fell apart. It didn't happen. And so basically, I went back to work for Paramount Pictures, And the Lord asked me, he said, I want you to move to New Orleans. And I kicked and I screamed and I cried for about 2 weeks. It was the inner city of New Orleans. I didn't want to go. And the Lord said, wait a minute, you were getting ready to move to Africa and go be a missionary, but you won't go to New Orleans? And how often, you know, we want to do ministry and missions and follow God on our own terms. And the Lord really rebuked me and called me on that. And so repented and just, you know, asked the Lord to speak and move. And we just said, okay, Lord, wherever you lead, you know, really making Jesus Lord.
Yeah.
And not on our terms. And as soon as I surrendered to the Lord in that, my boss walked up to me about 30 minutes later and he said, hey, we're opening up a movie studio and we want to send you to New Orleans to go open it. And so I said to my wife, I said, this isn't a coincidence. And this move is not about opening up a movie studio for Paramount Pictures. The Lord is up to something. And this is just giving us the confidence to step out. And we were kind of realigned with the Lord's grace in that moment. And so we moved down there. And 5 days later, we get word that this massive storm that was going to come with 30 feet of water downtown called Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
And so make a long story short, it did. And I, again, another story I feel like is so relevant right now with dealing with this pandemic, which it's now a pandemic. As that storm was approaching New Orleans, we sat there and people were panicking. Church members, pastors were panicking. Get out of the city. You got to go. This thing's going to wipe us out. It's going to kill everybody. And we just said, you know what, Lord? We've invested so much to be here. We know that you have us here. We got on our knees around the kitchen table and they were literally boarding up the windows around us. And we just refused to respond in fear. And the Lord showed me a picture. He showed me a picture of a bridge on the other side of town. Didn't make any sense to go that direction, but I saw us driving over it. And we did. We got in our car and we drove across the bridge. And we got over the Mississippi River and it paralleled I-10 and we drove all the way to Baton Rouge. Literally, I think we might have saw two cars. And the same people who were panicking, telling us to evacuate and leave the city, were calling us and telling us that they were stuck on the side of the road. They were stuck in traffic for 10 hours. They had run out of gas and they became casualties of the storm when we responded in faith. And it was such a it was such an enjoyable family ride. We actually felt guilty in light of all of what was going on. Like, how could we have so much peace? And so anyway, we came back to New Orleans about a month and a half later. And the long and the short of it is God showed up in power and we just saw God move in such incredible ways on that street corner about a mile from the Superdome. And we just saw people who, you know, they knew Jesus, but after that storm in the midst of desperation, they really wanted to know Jesus. And people got their lives right and we were able to be there in that moment. And it was like revival. I mean, people were literally falling out of their cars in front of the building, getting on their knees and giving their life to the Lord. And I just said, Lord, whatever this is, I don't understand, but I want to do this the rest of my life. You know, I don't want to go where people don't want Jesus. And in the midst of crisis, people really want God.
Yes. So that birthed that whole disaster response. And so how did you get to the training part of it, training your responders?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, having hosted a lot of mission teams, we had teams come from all over the country down there. You know, if you think about it, in the midst of disaster, you know, take this storm, for instance, people lost their lives. People lost brothers, sisters, mothers, children. There's things that you want to say. There's things that you don't want to say.
Right.
I mean, know this even in your own life. You know, when somebody starts talking about loss or a death or a trauma, the first thing that happens in us is it triggers our own trauma and we want to relate to that person. We start talking about our trauma, but you know what? It's not about our trauma in that moment. It's about that person and becoming a good listener. I mean, that's just one example, you know, of how you want to listen or things you don't want to say, like, well, God just needed a little angel and that's just such a bad thing to say. And so we just really want to, you know, we feel honored and we really feel the fear of the Lord on what the Lord's given us in terms of stewarding people's hearts well going in. And so, you know, you have people, you know, people with a great heart. They love Jesus. They want to come in and help, but we want to keep them safe. We want to let them know, hey, this is how you do it. This is how you could do it well. And, you know, our heart is simply this, to meet the highest level of practical need with the highest level of spiritual encounter that we can do. And so just training those people in those basics is huge for us.
Right. And it's really cool too, because your base used to be here, right close to here in Nashville?
Where the tornado touched down, it was just a couple of blocks where the tornado came through. And so there was no question on our mind whether or not we were going to come to this. But yeah, I kind of, we've have a little bit of a history with disaster following us around or getting tipped off, you know, in terms of, you know, the sense that something's coming, we need to be ready and whatnot. But why not? I mean, you know, I believe that this is a mission strategy. It's a missions field. You know, the prophet Agabus in Acts chapter 11 came to the city before the famine happened, stood up and said, hey, a famine's coming. It says that the elders determined to then send relief. Means they took the offering before the famine even happened and they were ready to respond. Right. And so why not? It's a mercy strategy of the Lord to have his people in the right place at the right time.
Well, that's why I know my parents love working with CRY, and you also have a base of your foundation is not just going out and helping, but you start everything with prayer and worship. So your foundation is that. Explain that.
Absolutely. Well, first, let me say, I absolutely love and adore your parents. They're like my second parents. Oh my goodness. We would not be in existence without them. I just adore them so much. And such wonderful people. But, you know, in the midst of crisis, there's such challenges and there's such pressure and there's could be so many stressors, particularly when there's, you know, tremendous amount of need or there's high casualties. And, you know, to stay intimate with the Lord in the midst of that, like, I don't have anything to give anybody if I don't have oil in my lamp.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that we learned down in New Orleans in the early days, you know, we got down there after, after a month of being evacuated and we rolled into the town. And, you know, we just saw so much need. Everybody had their refrigerators, you know, ruined because they left. They lost power, so the refrigerators rotted. And then, you know, gas was off, and there was no grocery stores open. And so as we rolled in, you know, we just began to worship and pray. And and that's what we did every morning, 2 hours of worship and prayer. And in the midst of that, the Lord would give us our strategy every day. And the Lord just said, hey, I want you to cook for the people. And I didn't know what I was doing. And so I went to the grocery store and I'm rolling my shopping cart down the one grocery store that was open. It was like a little, you know, mini grocery store, little mini shopping carts. And I had four number 10 cans of beans in it, red beans. And a guy walked up to me and he said, who are you cooking for? And I just said, well, we're just a little inner city church cooking for people. He goes, you need food, you come see me. He was the butcher. He buys me $600 worth of chicken. And then within 2 weeks' time, tractor trailer loads of food are showing up. And it just showed me this, that you have to do everything out of intimacy. And one of the greatest challenges we find for people doing disaster relief is the pressure. What's the first thing that goes out the window when we're under pressure or we don't have time? Worship and prayer.
Yeah.
You know, it happens in our own lives. But then we disconnect ourselves from the vine and we lose intimacy with Jesus. And so it's a major foundational point for us. That's why we have the mobile hope trailer, the prayer trailer that we try and bring in to every disaster as well.
And I think too, it helps ground you with stress of dealing with and responding to the trauma of what people have been through.
Absolutely.
Because you, like you said, you can't give if you don't have it filled yourself up with the love of Christ. And when you get tired and you're going day after day and you're working, the best way to do that is a intentional time of prayer and worship like you guys do, to keep that, you know, to keep yourself fueled up to be able to help others and speak into their lives, because you're just like you know you're a conduit, you know, in order to keep that on, you know, because even just working like with Rich, you know, you get tired, you can get stressed, but as soon as we start the day with a scripture or we, you know, we always pray before we do something, that always
keeps it
going good. Do you have a story on this particular tornado storm that sticks out to you? I saw the video of the one you did with the narrow escape. That was an incredible story. Mm-hmm. Do you have something that maybe how somebody maybe have been healed? A couple of John Marshall's posts, he talks about healing and people being really touched just by the volunteers coming in and helping. Do you have something that sticks out to you that's...
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest story that stands out, which is an awesome miracle, is just the level of volunteers and how the church has really come together. I mean, it's so noticeably different in this state, in this city, compared to every other disaster we've ever responded to, is how the people have come together. And that's what everybody remarks on, is the fact that the unity and how, you know, I've asked the Lord this question before. You know, he says, I'm coming back for one spotless bride. And I asked the Lord the question. I said, Lord, how are you going to do that? Like, you know, you drive through the neighborhood, you see so many different churches and denominations, you know. And here's the thing, you know, you put pressure on people, you put, you know, crisis, and people figure that out. The things that, you know, we think are big differences suddenly are not a big difference. The guy who is working here, one of the pastors here, walked over to me and he said, I am so blessed to see you guys. You know, probably on a normal day, I probably, you know, wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. You know, you're white, I'm black, you know, and we probably wouldn't cross paths. But look at the beauty of how the Lord brings us all together in the midst of this. Right. And so that's a beautiful thing, even in the context of the day and the age and the tensions that, you know, are around socially right now. And so that's a real miracle. But, you know, every day that we've cooked, you know, I mean, we're looking out right now at the mobile kitchen. We're looking, look at the conversations, look at the people talking to one another. Only because of Christ's broken body can we have that. Only in him can we be reconciled, not only to the Father, but be reconciled to one another. You see black and white, and that is an absolute miracle. That is a testimony of the cross right there. And then in the midst of that, what you'll see is you'll see people praying for people, and that's what we've been doing every single day. And every single day, whether it's healing an emotional owie or whether it's you know, just trauma that people have been through, there's been so many stories. I encourage you to go, you know, get the stories from the team. But, you know, I personally have seen, you know, people, you know, delivered and set free of anxiety and depression. I've seen knees healed, backs healed, you know, you name it, you know, and just spreading the joy and the love of God, and just seeing people, a smile on somebody's face is just so huge to us. We have a saying, it's just worth it to come for one person, you know. It really is. And, you know, because God, you know, Jesus would hang on a cross just for us, just, you know, as individuals, he'd do it all over again. And so I sign up every time I just see a smile on somebody's face. Or, you know, this morning, one of our responders, you know, got to work with a homeowner and pray for that person and how traumatized that person was. And then just after a simple debriefing and a prayer time, what a difference that made. And I'm just like, that makes it all worth it. I'm good. This is all worth it to come here, you know. So all the energy and all of the expense. But
where can people go to, like, donate, or maybe they want to get trained? Because, you know, my parents work with you guys now that you have a brand new camp up in Virginia, 85 acres?
Yeah, it's an 84-acre mission-based training center. And so we have a saying, train, give, go. And so if you want to volunteer, we don't mobilize untrained volunteers for the safety of the people we're ministering to and working with and the safety of the volunteers themselves. You can get trained in 10 hours online. It's a $59 course. It includes a background check. You can do that in the comfort of your own home very easily. You can go to www.criout.com. That's criout.com. And get trained, and then you're eligible to deploy with us. You can give. You can text the word, one word, give relief. It's just one word, give relief, to the number 41444. And that's a great way. You might not be able to train right now, but you can give. And then obviously go. You know, we need volunteers all the time. And, you know, obviously we're coming into tornado season. It's starting earlier and earlier every year now. It seems like there's not even a break now, maybe a couple of months a year. It used to not come until, like, you know, late May. But now they're starting in January, you know, in January, February. It's crazy. So we need people. That's probably probably the biggest challenges that we have is we need volunteers to get trained. We need to partner with churches. We can actually come if you're a pastor, a leader, you're a missions pastor, or you got a connection, you know, with your pastor, you want to bring this to your church. We can come and do a one-day seminar on a Saturday and train your entire church in one day. You know, and that's the thing that I'm driven by, is to see boots on the ground, to see the church come together. You know, I think the church is the greatest force to respond to disasters, but they may not have the training, they may not have the equipping. We come alongside of them and help the church to be successful in times like this, right, so that we can go out and get your people mobilized. So,
right, and I've heard some people talk about just their training and even some of the advanced training you do with scenarios that you set up on the camp has helped them. I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about coming up on a wreck, a car wreck, and they were able to help. So you do that kind of scenario setup at the camp also, right?
Yeah, we have all sorts of advanced trainings, and we train chaplains, we have medical, I mean, we have hundreds of hours of training online, but then we also do all sorts of advanced training events at the camp with scenarios as well. And, you know, the live simulations are a lot of fun. And, you know, and then it's, you know, people, they're so surprised when they come to a training event. They're like, oh, I thought I was going to get trained on how to, like, put on a bandage and then serve some food. No, this is actually ministry training. We're going to teach you how to pray for the sick, and not only pray for the sick, but heal the sick, and how to, you know, take care of the emotional wounds that people have. And then all the practicals as well. And, you know, again, our heart is just to meet the practical needs at the highest level we can, but to give somebody a spiritual encounter with the living God who cares about them deeply in that moment.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to go out and maybe catch a couple of the volunteers and get some, you know, on the ground stories of some stuff that they've encountered. But I appreciate you talking to me and
absolutely
get the word out about CRY.
Thank you so much. I love the organization.
So thank you, Sean.
Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you. Okay, I have Jason Alamond, who is working with CRY. Really great friends with my parents, Mike and Karen Wyatt. And he's going to talk a little bit about the efforts that CRY is doing here in Nashville for the tornado recovery. So talk about what you all are doing here, Jason.
Okay, so we came down here. The storm hit on Monday night, Tuesday morning. We decided about 9 a.m. to head out of Roanoke from our base camp, and we packed up our mobile kitchen unit and our tool trailer. We left Roanoke about noon. We got in here about 10 o'clock at night, and then a really awesome thing happened on the way down here is my wife sent me a messenger, Facebook messenger, and it was a local organization that had asked for volunteers. And I remember looking at that, and at that time it was 138 volunteers. And I actually called Mike Wyatt, and I said, Mike, what are we going to do with 138 volunteers? Mike is already down here. Uh-huh. And he's like, I don't know, we'll figure it out. And I'm going, I won't even be in there till 10 o'clock at night. We won't even have a chance to do assessments. And by the next morning, we got up, Mike and I got up at 6 a.m. and headed out, excuse me, with a couple local pastors. And we found a place over on Rosebanks to serve. Excuse me. And at that time, I looked at that same Facebook post that had gone pretty much viral by now, and we had 228 volunteers showing up, and we were like, oh my goodness, we've never seen an outpouring like that from a local community, that many people. So we headed out there. We met everybody at the church that morning at 8 a.m. And kind of gave them a briefing on what we're doing, how we're doing it. Went out there and we started cutting down trees. And a lot of it, that first 4 days, it was just hard work. Yeah. I mean, it was hauling, cutting up trees and hauling debris and just making a clear path for the professionals to get in there. Right. So that the insurance adjusters and the roofers and the electricians and all that stuff can get in there and start doing their thing. It was, so that was Tuesday, or Wednesday was the first day that we served. And that Sunday, the local church had asked us to come and share our message, like who we are, what we're doing there. So One Stone Church has been a great partner in this. They've literally given us their children's wing and said, move into the rooms, have at it. And so we went to the church service, which we don't normally do on deployments.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that is because on, you know, if a responder flies in on Friday to serve Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then we take the day off on Sunday to go to church. So we also, it's hard when the community is there and they can't walk away from the disaster on Sunday. So we kind of feel like we need to be here and serve the people there
the whole time.
Yeah. So Sunday morning, we ended up, the pastor asked if we would come and share, and we felt like we wanted to, but we also felt like we needed to, with that outpouring of that local community and that right. local church supporting us. We were managing 500 to 600 volunteers every day out
yeah.
there. So we went to that church, and Sean Malone actually had a chance to get up and share at the end. And of course, he encouraged the congregation, talked with the congregation a little bit, and encouraged them, and then asked all the members of the church to stand up. Basically, the CRY team, I believe there's about 23 of us, started walking around and praying for people in the church. It was specifically for people that raised their hands that needed prayer. But there was a gal that was sitting in front of me. She was about, I don't know, maybe 25 years old. She was sitting right in front of me. And I leaned forward and I put my hand on her shoulder and I prayed for her. And I heard the Lord say, the second I put my hand on her shoulder, I heard the Lord say, "Tell her I hear her yes." And I went, okay. So I hung on to it and I went around and prayed for some other people. Sean was doing some more talking, and John Marshall was sitting next to me. And John Marshall says, Sean was talking about leaders in the community. And John looks at this gal sitting next to me, or in front of me, and says, "That's you." And she started to cry. And after the service, I leaned forward and I said, "I just want you to know," I said, "I don't understand this, but I know the Lord's telling me to share this with you. So I just want you to know that the Lord hears your yes." And she started to weep, crying, just to the point where she actually, I reached out to give her a hug and she buried her face in my chest and I just gave her like a daddy hug.
Daddy hug.
You know what I mean? A big daddy hug, and just hung on to her. And I honestly thought, I'm not letting go until she lets go.
Uh-huh.
And we probably stood there long enough where it got a little bit uncomfortable. This big daddy hug. And then she finally looked at me and she said, "I'm going through a divorce."
Oh.
Right before the storm had hit, they had separated. So she's going through this thing by herself. What I didn't realize that Mike Gooch had walked by and prayed for her. I didn't even see Mike Gooch walk by, but he had said, "The Lord wants to hear your yes." And she had just confessed to the Lord, "Okay, Lord, yes." And then not even 5 minutes later, I confirm it with, "The Lord says he hears your yes." So just, I loved it. I was going, gosh, you know, the word says that we prophesy in part.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And we don't know that really weird thing that comes up. You go, "I don't even know this girl." You know what I mean? She's going to think I'm a weirdo sitting back here. The Lord hears your yes. You know what I mean? Praise Jesus. And it was a piece.
Yeah.
And the Lord just did a miraculous work in this gal's heart. And then I called Mike Gooch back over. Mike got to pray with her a little bit more. And then it was beautiful because John Marshall went up front and got the pastor's wife. And brought the pastor's wife back. So we were able to connect her with a local church. And it was just, it was really neat. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Right,
you know what I mean? Because we're leaving.
Yeah.
And now that relationship is,
right.
You know what I mean? It's there. So that's probably one of the coolest things.
That is really
seeing
neat.
The Lord do that.
I love those God stories like that. That's really neat. Now I have Frida Pittman. Mm-hmm. And do you have a specific story that kind of stands out? Maybe like he had one talking to a volunteer or maybe to a homeowner or anything like that? Or,
well, I've been in the kitchen most of the time.
Kitchen? So you've been doing a lot of food serving.
Mm-hmm. But there was a lady today that she came, I think this was fourth or fifth place she had been, and she was looking for help. And she was almost out of gas. And she was just, you could tell she just was feeling hopeless. So she got a lot of stuff there. The lady told us about her, and we were able to pray with her and her husband. Her husband was in the desert storm, so he has PTSD,
mm-hmm.
and he was really anxious, and, you know, and we got to pray with him and talk about PTSD and pray for that. And she is actually, their house was a tree, big tree went down the middle. And she said she remembers running to grab the kids. She has, there's three kids, 12, 13, something like that, a two-year-old, and her husband. Right now, they are actually living in a car in the yard because they can't live in the house.
Right.
And they really need a tent or something, but right now they're living in the car.
Oh.
And the car is borrowed from his boss.
Oh.
So there's so many stories like that, you know, and they really can't get any help. They said till FEMA or some of them haven't reached him yet, so they're hoping that they'll get somebody.
There is a lot of people that lost home and vehicle. Yeah.
And apparently the house is rent. They rent it from these people, and so they're letting them live in their yard. So, you know, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is.
But she trusts in God to bring her through it, and she said that she'll be okay one way or the other. And
well, that's neat. Well, thank you guys both for sharing, and hopefully I can get this word out about CRY, and I talked to Sean, so we'll be sharing a bunch of, I'll be sharing a bunch of pictures and stories on my podcast, so we'll be putting that out there. But thank you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I'm here with Tom Loper, who is also with CRY, Crisis Response International, who we've been talking to, and their relief efforts in the Nashville area. So, Tom, do you have a specific story that kind of stands out, either with working with volunteers or maybe a homeowner or something?
Totally. We were at Holly Street, a church there, and a couple came and ate, and I went and talked with them as they were leaving and found out that they were members of the church. They lived right across the street. They had some damage to their house, and we got to talk a little bit, and then I prayed for them, you know, that they would just experience God's peace and that every financial need would be met. And he came back 30 minutes later, and he said they were throwing out a bunch of stuff that was damaged and it was kind of valuable, and then somebody gave them a gift card for $500.
Oh, wow!
And he came back and shared that God immediately answered that prayer.
Oh, that's really neat. So, you've been out on the street doing, have you been doing cleanup or working with the kitchen?
I got here Monday, so it was just working with the kitchen and just talking to people, and so it's been really a blessing to just hear their stories and then share God's peace and God's hope and God's love with them.
What explain what the mobile kitchen is and like how many meals. I know you've done a lot of meals, so explain that. And you know, I've seen pictures of the wonderful barbecue you've been cooking and stuff like that.
God did something really neat, and I don't know all the details, but he brought together three different agencies to work together. The big smoker was someone else, and we did service, and they did cooking, and somebody else was doing stuff, and I think we went through 3,000 pounds of pork.
Ooh,
so I don't have any idea how many hundreds of meals, but
you bring the mobile kitchen from the CRY base?
Yes, this is based in Virginia, in the CRY base, and when something happens, they put out a call to all the trained volunteers. We're going to be in Nashville this week. Who can come? And then you show up.
Oh,
you
know, awesome.
You apply and show up.
Right.
So
it's volunteer. Everybody takes time off and comes and does that. Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate your story, and we'll be talking again and working with CRY again. Thank you.
Awesome.
I'm here with John Marshall, who's also with CRY, works a lot with CRY, and he's going to tell us what has stood out for you with this trip that CRY is doing in Nashville, you know, working with either volunteers or the homeowners that you've been helping.
You know about the guitar thing going on?
The singer. Yeah, Corey.
Okay. So I get to base camp. The first day I walk in, they said, hey, there's a chainsaw group from Alabama in there. So I said, okay. And so I walked back there. I said, what are you rednecks doing up here? And they all looked at me. I said, I'm from Fairhope. And they go, we're from Summerdale. So we're like, you know, 10 or 15 miles away from each other. And so we're living in the same county. And so I get to chit-chatting with them. And we become friends over several days. And we're talking to them. And they see what we're doing, the spiritual aspect of cry, which is the best thing. And so they get home and they call me and say, we want to train with cry. Can you come over and talk to us? Yeah, we're going to make this happen. So I'm going to go over and see them when I get home, and we're going to make it happen, and they're going to get certified, and they're going to respond with us. Well, a couple days later, he texts me. He says, give me a call. Okay, I call him, and he tells me about Corey
Asbury's
guitar getting smashed. And he says, now, Corey and I have been friends since we were 12 years old. This is not like a recent thing. He said, like, we're like really good friends. Well, he told that somebody wanted to buy Corey's guitar for parts. And so then Corey got the idea, well, why don't we just do a fundraiser with it and see what we can get and donate it to Nashville? And he knew his buddy was in Nashville doing relief work. So he called and said, hey, who would be a good outfit to donate to? He said, cry.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so he called me and, will you call him? I said, well, let's get Sean to call him. And so Sean got hooked up with him and talked to him. And that's the fundraiser going on. And when I checked this afternoon, it's like $4,000 already.
Wow.
And it's not even been 24 hours yet. So just those little connections that the Lord has going on and connecting the dots, and boom, we're out blessing people. And cry receives a blessing. And we got new responders coming on that are like-minded. And everywhere we go, people are wanting to join cry because they see what we're doing. You can work anywhere. You can hand out food anywhere. You can hand out supplies anywhere. With cry, you can minister.
Right.
So it was a pretty cool little connection. We're still laughing about it. Saying, can you believe that?
That's awesome. Awesome. That is,
because we listen to Corey Asbury's music all the time.
I know.
You know, we're like Bethel Music kind of people.
I love the God stories and everything. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, John.
Thank you.
I want to thank Sean Malone again for taking the time out to talk with me about Crisis Response International and all the other volunteers. It was wonderful talking to them. I love their God stories. They are wonderful people who just love God, and they just love other people. With that, it's so awesome to see. If you want to know more about Cry, you can go to www.cryout.com, which is CRIOUT.com. And like Sean was saying, you can get trained. You can do the one-day training. They have advanced training. They have all different kinds of chaplaincy training. They have the scenario training. They're at the camp. All kinds of training that you can get and learn how not to just minister to people physically, but especially spiritually and emotionally as they go through trauma, whatever that trauma might be. So go to that cryout.com and sign up for one of their training sessions. And if you are a church and you would love to have some of your church members trained in this kind of thing where they can respond to disasters, even in your area. I know, like in our area a few years ago, we had the really devastating fires up in the Smoky Mountains of Gatlinburg, and it almost destroyed the whole town of Gatlinburg, but there were so many buildings destroyed and people's lives were just so changed after that. And it could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse because if you don't know Gatlinburg, it's a town that we get about probably 10 to 12 million visitors a year that come into the Smoky Mountains right there through Gatlinburg. And this happened, the fire happened about a day after Thanksgiving week. So everybody had left already. It was amazing. But anyways, I kind of got off track. But the thing is, if you're a church and you want to have members prepared and trained to be able to respond to something if it happens in your area. Also go on that website and reach out to them, and they can come to you and train your church members at your church. It's a wonderful program, and it's well worth having members of your church get trained in this, in the different scenarios, and know how to respond to people in trauma. So it's a wonderful program with cryout.com, and thank you, Sean Malone, for that. Now, I always end my sessions and my episodes with a little bit of history, and today's story it's not too long, but it's pretty interesting. I'm always fascinated with these individual stories of just ordinary people doing something, stepping up and doing something extraordinary, in my view, in the fight for freedom that established this nation that we know that we love so much. So today's story is about a lady named Margaret Cochran. Margaret was born in 1751 near Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. In 1756, 5-year-old Margaret and her older brother were visiting their uncle when an Indian raiding party attacked her parents' homestead, killing their father and capturing their mother. The children were then raised by their uncle. In 1772, Margaret married John Corbin, a Virginia farmer. When the Revolutionary War began just a few years later, John joined the Continental Army, and Margaret went with him, as did many other wives. They tended to follow them in the camps. Wives of the soldiers often cooked for the men, washed their laundry, and nursed wounded soldiers. They also watched the men do their drills and no doubt learned those drills too. John's company was ordered to New York, and on November 1776, while they were stationed at Fort Washington in Upper Manhattan, 4,000 British soldiers and Hessian mercenaries attacked the outnumbered Maryland and Virginia riflemen who were defending the position. Corbin's artillery was ordered to hold off the attackers with what few cannons they had. During the 4-hour battle, every hand was needed to man the cannon and the muskets. John was assisting a gunner until the gunner was killed. At this point, John took charge of the cannon and Margaret assisted him. Sometime later, John was killed instantly when a Hessian musket ball found its mark. With no time to grieve, Margaret continued loading and firing the cannon by herself. Because of her aim and accuracy, her position drew the attention of the 10 field cannons of the Hessians, and they soon trained their guns on her. She continued to fire, however, until she was wounded by grapeshot, which tore her shoulder, almost severing her left arm, mangled her chest, and lacerated her jaw. Other soldiers moved her to the rear, where she received medical care. Fort Washington was captured by the British, but the wounded American soldiers were paroled. They were ferried across the Hudson to Fort Lee, New Jersey. Margaret was then transported further in a jolting wagon all the way to an army hospital in Philadelphia. She never recovered fully from her wounds and was unable to use her left arm for the rest of her life. On June 26th of 1776, the state of Pennsylvania gave Margaret $30 due to her disabled condition. She received a lifetime disability pension of 1/2 pay on 1779 from the Continental Congress, making her the first woman to obtain such a commitment from the government. In July 1779, the Continental Congress granted her a pension, half the pay and allowances of soldier in service, due to her distinguished bravery, making her the first woman to receive a pension from the government as a disabled soldier. She was enrolled in the Corps of Invalids, created by Congress for wounded soldiers, and continued to be included on muster lists until the end of the war in 1783. For the next 20 years, she lived in the West Point, New York area. There was correspondence between General Knox and Quartermaster William Price between the years of 1782 and 1790, indicating the fact that Margaret needed special care, being she was unable to bathe and dress herself. She had been placed in the care of a Mrs. Randall, who lived in what is now known as Highland Falls, New York. Margaret is sometimes confused with another Revolutionary War heroine, Molly Pitcher, whose real name was Mary Ludwig Hayes Macaulay. That was one of my favorite characters of Molly Pitcher, and I believe I've talked about that before. I do have a little bit of information like of Molly on my website, because she has always been an inspiration and kind of somebody I've always admired through my years growing up, and that was when I first learned about her in school. And of course, Molly Pitcher was not her real name. It was something that was given to the ladies, maybe specifically her, Mary Ludwig Hayes Macaulay, or other ladies. When the soldiers would need a pitcher of water, they would just holler out a name, Molly. That was just a general common name because they didn't know their name specifically. And they would holler out, Molly, pitcher, when they needed a pitcher of water to drink or to cool off a cannon or something like that. But anyway, that was always fascinating to me. Margaret Corbin died in the year 1800 near West Point, New York, just prior to her 50th birthday. And she was buried in the highlands above the Hudson River, identified by only a crude stone marker. Her life and death would have gone into oblivion, but for the stories that were handed down by local villagers. They actually have she was reinterred with full honors, military honors at the cemetery at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. And, they have a statue commemorating her, a monument commemorating her at West Point, New York. So that's just another simple story of someone who was just doing something, stepping out and doing something to help in the fight for freedom at the establishment of this great nation, who basically sacrificed her life for that, because she died young and was severely injured for the rest of her life, and, you know, with her arm that way. So keep that in mind as you, think about the freedoms that we have now and what we're fighting to keep. You know, there's so much going on in the political world this year with the election, and we get caught up in a lot of different things. But if we go back to the foundation of what this country was founded on and what it was established for, we have to remember the Constitution. It was a guideline. It was something that our founders realized we have God-given rights, and those rights are enshrined in the Constitution, and they give the power to the people, individuals, and then cities, towns, cities, states, and then the federal government is supposed to have the least amount of power, and the people are supposed to have the most. And it's kind of flipped. So we have to remember what our country was founded on. And I don't think a lot of people understand that sometimes, especially if they're not from or weren't born and raised in America. But there are a lot of people that come here and become Americans who really appreciate it. And they really can see the foundation values that we have and the freedoms that we enjoy here that are enshrined in that document, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And they appreciate it because they come from where they don't have it. And so we kind of have to step back and not take things for granted. And sometimes a storm like the tornadoes in Nashville, and even that coronavirus, COVID-19 stuff that's going on right now, it really puts in perspective our life and what we should be focused on, and really drill down. And like I was saying earlier, don't let fear, and no matter what the situation is, whether it's a tornado and you've lost all your belongings and you've lost your home, maybe you've lost a loved one, always dig in and know that God loves you, and he loves us, and he wants the best for us. He is a good God. He wants the best for you. And just remember that he loves you. And there are a lot of people out there. If you need to talk to somebody, find a church member, find somebody you know that is maybe a lover of Christ, follower, and talk to them and just get to know Jesus. He's a wonderful, it's a wonderful relationship to have when you can have that comfort and you don't have to walk in fear, because when you can rely on him, you don't walk in fear. The two don't go together. So just keep that in mind. But thank you for listening to these wonderful stories from Cry and the little history story. And remember, not to walk in fear, but God has given us a spirit of love, power, and sound mind. And just keep that in mind as you go about your day and weeks ahead. And don't forget to follow me on straighttalkwithmj.net. And thank you for listening, and God bless.